Welcome to the coffee table. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. The topic is Kachemak Bay State Park. And I'd like to introduce you to the guests this morning. Jason Oakley.
Hello, how are you?
You are a ranger at Kachemak Bay State Park, is that correct?
This is true.
Okay, well, thanks for being here tonight, today, this morning. It's the light. It's doing this to me. Jack Blackwell is on the phone, Parks Superintendent. Do you read me, Jack?
Yes, I do, Kathleen. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Also on the panel is Mako Haggerty, representing Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park. You own and operate Mako's Water Taxi, so you're in and out of the park all summer.
Yeah, that is correct. Good morning.
Good morning. The first thing I want to do is open up the phones. If you have questions for Park Superintendent Jack Blackwell, for Ranger Jason Oakley, for Mako Haggerty from Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park, you can call 235-7721. Or, if you don't feel like hanging on the phone, email your questions to info@kbbi.org. So first, a short outline of the park. Jason, can you talk to us a little bit about the size, the facilities, the fees, and then I have a few other questions.
Sure. So the park's roughly 400,000 acres. We've got a wilderness park aspect of it. Much of our park that's utilized by the public is Front Country. Our Gruen Glacier Lake's a fantastic spot. Public loves to come. Tourists love to come. Roughly 80 miles of trails, of which certain aspects are better maintained than others. We've got about 6 public use cabins, 5 yurts that are commercially ran out there. Public loves using our public use cabins. They love the yurts. Quite a few commercial operators that offer guided hiking, guided kayaking, all these types of activities.
What about accessibility for people with disabilities? Are there any trails that are accessible?
I'm going to go with no. For accessibility, I know the water trail's been working to do...
The water trail, right.
Yeah, to work on like beach mats where people in wheelchairs have the ability to kayak down a beach or use the wheelchair down a beach to be able to get into their kayak and then an exit point where they could exit onto that mat and head up the beach. And we've also worked with some of the local organizations to try to make our ranger station area more accessible. And we have issues out there as well as at a low tide, the dock itself just does not meet the qualifications to allow accessibility. But simpler things we can do, like get rid of steps and make sure that during a high tide, somebody in a wheelchair can easily access our public use cabins and our restrooms out there. But once they're there, they can't really leave that to go hiking on trails or anything.
And are you, Jason, are you there year-round?
I am in Homer year-round, yes.
And when are you across the bay?
It definitely varies. During the summer, I shoot for 2 days a week across the bay. I'm the district ranger, which is supervisor. We do have a ranger one position who is focused in Kachemak Bay that makes it over there. I'd say 4 days a week. We've got an outstanding park specialist, Eric Clark, who is across the bay every day.
Outstanding. Yes, we have you guys to thank for our trails report, too, this time of year.
This is true.
And Jack Blackwell is on the phone in Soldotna. Is that right, Jack?
Yes.
So can you give people, you are the superintendent of parks. Kachemak Bay State Park is not your only responsibility. Can you give people an idea of what you do?
Sure. I'm the regional superintendent for the state parks on the Kenai Peninsula and in Prince William Sound. And I'm based out of our headquarters for the region, which is in Soldotna. And boy, one of my favorite things to do is to spend time with our staff and get out and spend time in Kachemak Bay State Park. It's really a gem, and you know, the people of Homer and the Kenai Peninsula really should be proud of this this great resource that we have across the bay.
So the first thing I want to talk to you about, Jack Blackwell, is the parks plan, the parks management plan. So what I was reading on the state website was that you guys started making the plan in 2014. And I was told to expect something last summer, but still haven't seen it yet. Do you work on the parks plan? Who makes this plan?
Sure. Well, we started off the management plan revision with a questionnaire that was submitted available for folks to fill out and provide us with some input. And we started that back in November of 2013. And our current management plan was drafted in 1995, and so the Department of Natural Resources recognizes that there have been a lot of changes since the park plan was drafted in 95, and so devoted our DNR planners to start working on the plan revision. So we have a planning team that's been formed that includes professional planners within the Department of Natural Resources, as well as our field staff, Jason Oakley, myself, and Pam Russell, our permitting officer, are on the plan, as well as our other field staff provide input to Ranger Brad Goreski and Eric Clark. So we started off by after the questionnaire was sent out, we met with actually we had scoping meetings in the communities near the park. So we held a meeting in Homer, Seldovia, Port Graham, Nanwalek, as well as Anchorage to gather input. And our planners have been working on this. Our planners wear many different hats, and so they're also tasked with working on other department management plan revisions, and so they're stretched pretty thin. But we expect that we will have a draft available in the near future, and would really welcome public input on this.
Can a person give public input on that?
We will issue a media release and try to get the word out for folks to let them know different methods. But the plan will likely be available on our website for folks to look at and we'll work on trying to identify our outreach efforts for that too. So,
and
we definitely want to get the word out.
Is there a timeline for completion?
I don't have a firm date, but I expect that we'll see something here in the next month or so. The plan is at the point where it's just about ready for the agencies to review. So agencies like Fish and Game, actually, Fish and Game is also on our. We have a representative on our planning team, but other state agencies will weigh in on the draft, and then once those comments are evaluated and addressed, then the plan will be available for public review.
Great. Now, if you can stay on the line, we're going to be calling for questions, so you might be able to weigh in on any questions people might have. But also, since you're not in the room with us, I want to tell you now that if you feel like there's something, information that is lacking or something that needs to be added, or just you have something to say about something, you jump right in, okay?
Okay, I'll do that. And before we leave the management plan, I'd just like to mention that, the management plan will likely be a document that guides park management for the next 20 years or so. So we really want to make sure that we get the plan right and that public weigh in on this. So I just really would encourage folks to be involved and engaged, and we definitely will try to get the word out to folks about this and how they can do that.
Okay, thanks. And Mako Haggerty is here in the studio. You're a member of Friends of Ketchikan Bay State Park, and you guys just had a meeting on Monday.
We did. We talked about upcoming events. Before I go on to that, I would like to add some information about the park.
Go for it.
It's our oldest state park.
The first one in Alaska.
First one in Alaska. So we're, you know, we're very proud of that. But there's also parts of the park that are on this side of the bay. So you have Cottonwood Eastland, which is undeveloped and will probably stay that way for a while. But the water trail accesses Cottonwood Eastland. Campsites are being slowly and meticulously developed along the water trail route. There's also Diamond Creek recreational area, which is very popular on this side.
Also the ski, the Eveline?
Eveline, yeah. Yes. Eveline recreational area is all part of the, under the umbrella of state parks. And actually Overlook Park at the top of Baycrest Hill is also under the umbrella. So it's not just the other side of the bay. And if you go beyond the other side of the bay, on the other side of the peninsula.
On the other side of the other side of the bay.
That's right. Keep going farther, and you've got Nuka Island, which is part of Kachemak Bay State Park. But as a group, friends, when we encourage everybody that's a park enthusiast to join friends. It's a very vital and robust group. We're doing a lot of, I think, good things. We have events that are coming up. We participate in Shorebird Festival. We have a pancake breakfast.
This Sunday?
That is this Saturday.
This Saturday.
This Saturday we'll be having the pancake breakfast. It's a great place to meet some of the rangers and the people that are involved with Friends of the Park. We also have a booth at this year's Shorebird Fair, which is going to be up at the high school commons, and that's going to be a good place to buy some of our great t-shirts and sweatshirts, and also sign up for Trails Day, which this year happens on the first Saturday of June. It'll be June 2nd, and we have a number of projects across the bay. The important thing I want to emphasize on as far as volunteering for Trails Day is we need people to sign up on the volunteer service agreement. So we have to get those in before we can get you signed up on one of the projects across the bay. But that's always, we always get a great turnout for that. And that's another thing that Friends of the Park.
Okay. And then in the second half hour, we will remind everyone about that and let them know where they can sign up and try and hook people up, because it's the volunteers get transport over there and work all day, and it's a fun day out in the park. But back to my question, which is what happened at the meeting? Can you give us any kind of any information about the meeting on Monday?
Sure. So, you know, of course, we go through, it's a board meeting, so we go through our finances, and then we get a water trail report from, which is a committee that is, you know, a separate committee from our board meeting, and find out what they've been up to lately. We get proposals from people in the community for projects in the park, and we got one this week from Janet Klein. It's very interesting, starting a baseline study up there in the Alpine, and something that I think the park sorely needs, baseline studies, not just in the Alpine, but
studying climate effects, studying water quality. What is it?
Basically establishing what the park looks like now, and then we will be able to, once we have that information, a baseline, then we'll be able to refer to it in the future and see what changes have happened. And, you know, it's not just the Alpine, but I think we should have some in the water as well. Of course, you know, State Park, this is one of the few state parks, maybe the only state park that actually has its boundary out in the water. So there's some areas in this bay that I believe we need a baseline study in, just to see how things are progressing.
So I want to move along to there are a lot of different ways to use this park. There's public use. There's all the things you were talking about, the trails and the water trail. There's private use. There is land over there that people live on. There is commercial use. So fishermen are out there, but also things like kayak guides. And then finally, there is what is now industrial use, or I suppose it's also commercial use, which is aquaculture and the net pens. And I want to know, does the Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park involve themselves in, like, have taking positions on those sorts of things?
Actually, we have kind of steered away from taking positions on that. If the Citizen Advisory Board is the one that, you know, advises the park in the direction that they'd like to see the park go. And those issues are definitely on the agenda frequently at the Kachemak Bay State Park Citizen Advisory Board meetings, of which we're having one tonight.
And Jason Oakley, do you have any relationship to the aquaculture that's going on out there? How do you interact with it?
So as the boots on the ground resource for state parks, I'm the one who will go out and do site inspections. I'll go out to the hatchery, walk around. I am friends or know many of the field staff that work out at the hatcheries. Any deficiencies we find with the permits, we address with different individuals out there and just monitor the day-to-day operations that they do. Not to say that I get out there every day, but a couple times a year I'll go out and do site visits. And I'm also willing to take any other staff of Fish and Game or any of our permitting officers for state parks or anybody else wants to go out there. You know, generally they'll hop on our boat and we'll do a site visit, as we know the tides and we know where stuff is and how to give them the tour.
And Jack Blackwell in Soldotna. So is there, do you take reports on the net pen aquaculture or on any aquaculture in the park? And what do you do with that information?
Sure. I guess, you know, we certainly will, if folks have concerns or thoughts or ideas, suggestions on the activities, we meet with them. We'll talk with people about their concerns, and then if there is a concern that comes in, we will, work to address it or follow up on it and see what can be done. But a lot of our, there's a number, as you just mentioned, there's a number of different organizations and businesses and stakeholders that work and visit and interact with the park. Our management plan gives us guidance on activities that can occur in the park. We also fall back on the state statute that has established the park and other state laws and regulations. So, you know, we try to look at activities from a lot of different viewpoints and try to see what activities will work and what can occur in the park.
Okay, thank you. I want to move on to a little discussion of the Conservation Corps and the volunteers. Jason Oakley, can you tell me a little bit about how the volunteers are utilized?
Yeah, so we have got volunteers that usually come from the lower 48. We pay them about $500 a month. We house them at our housing facility on East End Road. And every year we do something different with these volunteer crews. Sometimes we write them into our grants to do assist with trail maintenance or reconstruction of trails. And when we do that with them, they're kind of fixed at a certain trail the entire year. This year, we didn't get very many applications, so we're only having two volunteers, but we house one at the ranger station to be that face of state parks to meet with public users of that area. It's a great area to go pick berries. It's a great area to go fishing. It's a great area for the public use cabins, and so they're there as the park representative. And our other volunteers were gonna definitely expand the program and open their horizons, where these are generally college interns that come up here, and so we're gonna have them trying to lead guided volunteer hikes over the summer. We're gonna have them developing information to be posted in our public use cabins about the public use cabins, the area. And they're also going to go out and do trail maintenance with us. The volunteers are the only flexible trail maintenance that the state pays for Kachemak Bay State Park. All the other trail crews are grant funded, and they are very oriented towards what the grant was written for. So these volunteers are the only ones out there who do trail maintenance, other than all of the wonderful volunteers of the local Homer community that show up in force to help this park out. And our volunteer Conservation Corps members help lead those volunteer crews as well. And I just want to shout out. We had 5,000 volunteer hours last year from the community out helping our trails.
And you, I want you to tell me, because I know you guys last year recognized Kathy Sarnes Irwin as Volunteer of the Year.
That is correct. She was our recipient of the coveted Golden Pulaski Award. And so we're really proud and happy to honor her with that award. She is a very dedicated park enthusiast and gave a lot of her time last year, especially on the Grace Ridge Trail. So it's volunteers like that that really help keep a lot of these trails open right now due to budget restrictions that every aspect of Alaska government suffering right now, I believe, but parks especially. And it seems like parks tends to be at the bottom of the list as far as agencies that get money, and that's too bad because Alaska is on everybody's bucket list. Everybody wants to come to Alaska at least once in their life, and the parks is one of the great attractions of Alaska. And so I'm always baffled that we don't, as a government, that the government hasn't put more money into state parks, because it sure deserves it. And what it gives back is 2, 3, 4, 10-fold. And so.
I have to ask, Golden Pulaski?
The Golden Pulaski.
Where's the name come from?
Well, Pulaski was a fellow that invented a fire. Let's see, it was a tool to help put out forest fires, and handed it out to the forest fire crews. It's a Pulaski. It's a half axe, half hoe, and so we thought that was an appropriate symbol for our volunteers.
Excellent. So also, is the Artist in the Park program still underway? Does it still take applications, and do people live out there and make art over the summer?
Right. So that is a new program that's being launched in the Kachemak Bay area. It is originally started in the Juneau area, and so we wanted to bring that operation up here.
We certainly have the facilities for it.
Right. We have, this winter will be our first Art in the Park residency happening across the bay. It doesn't happen over the summer because we've got our volunteer hosts out there. But come August 15th, when that host no longer is at that facility, we will accept applications for people to do art in the park. We'll provide them transport over there. We'll bring them transport back. They do have to provide their own food, their own bedding, their own art supplies, this kind of stuff. But it's a beautiful site.
How long does it last? How long do you stay over?
A week to 2 weeks. It can be longer or shorter based on what the needs are of the artists and what they're thinking and how we're collaborating.
Okay, and alaska.gov is probably where you find the application. Search for Artist in the Park and download the application and send it back in, right?
That sounds about right.
And what about, so are there any poems from Poems in Place, which is another program that I've seen, like at the beach, I've seen poems. There's one up in Turning an Arm. Are there any in Kachemak Bay State Park, or is there any plan for that to happen?
I'm glad you mentioned that because
good.
Because I have no idea.
Oh.
And but
darn,
I think
Marco.
that's something we should encourage. If there's a poet out there that has some words that they wanted to throw at this park, we would be happy to have them.
What about it, Jack Blackwell? Is there any are there any poems in place in the parks that for which you're the superintendent?
Yes, Lowell Point State Recreation Site in Seward, we have poems and place, and of course in Homer by the Islands and Oceans Visitor Center, there's some poems and place, and we're certainly open to open to the idea of expanding that to Kachemak Bay State Park,
So while I have you. And, oh, go ahead, Jason.
I'd like to say something.
Go for it.
Dave Brand, or the Kachemak Bay Norik Ski Club, has adapted the Eveline site, and they've got a little pavilion out there that overlooks the entire viewscape of Kachemak Bay State Park across the bay, and there's a book out there for people to write haikus in or poems or whatever they want to write in there. And Dave Brand, who's the area manager out there, he takes some of those poems, he reads them, and I think he collects them. So there's a stack of poems have started. And I'm not sure what he does with them, but we could definitely frame one or two.
Yeah, Dave Brand is another dedicated volunteer, and I'd like to shout out to him and everything he's done.
On both sides of the bay.
Oh, he's helped develop the water trail, and he's...
And the ski trails.
And the ski trails. So shout out to Dave Brand.
Now, the next thing I want to discuss, while I've got Jack Blackwell here and Jason, I definitely want your input as well, Mako, but I think it's you two that I need to ask this about. What about invasive species in the park, plant and animal? What are they, and are there plans for eradication or management of these species? Go ahead, Jason.
Okay. So we, Homer Soil and Water Conservation District has done surveys in our park in the past to look for invasive species. I think they did find sweet clover at one time. The Bradley Lakes area, there is some invasive species in which they've worked last year, I want to say, to try to eradicate that infestation. In our park itself, the only invasive species that I've really seen is dandelions, and that's just a real tough one. There are the vectors present of how invasive species can be introduced into our park, and we are very focused on minimizing that, and those vectors would be heavy.
The bottoms of boats.
Well, that's one, and that's something that we do very little research onto. We, the Kachemak Bay Research Reserve is doing an outstanding job monitoring for invasive species using volunteers to go out. Rosie's been very active in working with the volunteer programs, putting different traps out for different types of aquatic invasive species to try to figure out where those are and if they're here yet. As far as I know it, they haven't really found too much, but I am not the expert on that component. The vectors that I see entering the land, the terrestrial areas of the park, would be any heavy equipment that goes over to the park. We do have a power line that runs through our park, and so when HEA has to do maintenance on their work or on their line, they'll bring in heavy equipment that comes from the Homer side. And if you look at the ditches around Homer, there's a lot of invasive species. So we put in our stipulations with these different organizations that any heavy equipment they bring over there has to be power washed thoroughly, no mud on it, and this kind of stuff. We ask for that they do a re-veg of native indigenous species from the Homer area once they've disturbed land, so there's not less possibility of an invasive taking that first foothold in out-competing native species through natural vegetation processes. There's also the hatchery operation that does use heavy equipment. A lot of that equipment, once it's purchased, kind of stays over there, though. But, definitely areas to monitor. And it's the way we're going to find invasives is through knowledgeable individuals knowing what an invasive is and then reporting it back to the park.
Well, plus you guys rely pretty heavily on, like, the research reserve.
Oh, yeah. It's, we're a staff of three and only one year-round. So we rely on other organizations that see the need and do the best they can to fill the void.
And Jack Blackwell, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think Jason did a really good overview about invasive species in the park. And I would like to add, though, that we do rely heavily on our partners. You mentioned the Research Reserve. There's many other organizations, agencies, businesses that we rely on. We really have a wonderful network and partnership in the community. In fact, that's probably one of the things that I really enjoy about working with the stakeholders in Kachemak Bay is just a good group of diverse folks and interests, and there's a lot of support for the state park, and we really appreciate our partners and good working relationships that we have, and we could not do it without without that support. So,
and Ranger Jason Oakley, also feel free to jump in on this, Jack Blackwell. How much, or can you talk a little bit about the area of the park that is designated as critical habitat?
So the critical habitat designation is the water, as far as our park's concerned. Fox River Flats is terrestrial, but not within the park. And so the state park manages the waters of Tutkapé, Sadie Cove, Halibut Cove Lagoon, a decent chunk of water off of Glacier Spit, and Chinapoot Bay waters. And that overlap is two agencies with different managerial objectives.
So are you collaborating with Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife? Who are your agencies?
So the immediate staff is not collaborating with Fish and Game on the critical habitat area. We have a representative from DNR that is present on the board. I do sit in on those board meetings, and you know, it's
I'm sorry.
Very large collaboration of different agencies locally that give input to them. And I don't know all of the different agencies.
Yeah, Kathleen, if I could just add to that, too.
Go ahead.
You know, the Department of Natural Resources and Department of Fish and Game do have a cooperative agreement to co-manage these areas. So we do try to work together with with our sister agency, Jason had mentioned sitting on the planning team, the critical habitat plan is also in the process of being revised, and so we do participate and work with on that plan revision as well.
Okay, the time has come to take a short break, because when we return, we will be talking about Shorebird and Trails Day, bear awareness, so many things. But for the moment, the JBs will take us on a short dance break. This is The Coffee Table. You're listening to KBBI Homer with Jason O'Cooley, Park Ranger, Jack Blackwell, Park Superintendent, and Mako Haggerty from Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park.
Yeah! Just give me some more.
You are tuned to The Coffee Table on KBBI. The time is 9:39 a.m. Jason O'Cooley, ranger for Kachemak Bay State Park, is a guest. Also, Jack Blackwell, park superintendent, and Mako Haggerty from Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park. Mako, I'm turning the mic over to you now, because I want to hear about Shorebird Festival, Friendship Walk, Trails Day, everything that's going on that you might invite people to participate in.
Well, you know, Shorebird around here means pretty much the beginning of spring. And that's when Friends of the Park kind of kicks into high gear. And we've got a couple of events at Shorebird. One, of course, is a pancake breakfast, which I can't promote enough. And then we've got our booth up at the high school commons. Both of those are going to take place on Saturday. And
it's early. Pancake breakfast starts early because birders get up very early.
Oh, yeah. 7:30. It's almost,
oh, well, it's
almost
not that early.
It's almost late for most of the birders.
They come in after they've been out birding.
Don't go birding on an empty stomach. That's my philosophy. So, up at the high school commons, we're going to have a booth, and then that's where we start the process of getting people to sign up for Trails Day. And I mentioned earlier that Trails Day is National Trails Day is on the first Saturday of June, and that's across the country. And we, you know, cooperate or coordinate with that date, and so State Parks has, especially right here, we have our own Trails Day that happens on the same day. Where you sign up is at that booth at High School Commons. We also have this weekend on Sunday, our annual Friendship Walk. That's a guided birding tour that we take people over to Glacier Spit, and they essentially walk the length of Glacier Spit, which, I don't know, 4 miles, I guess, from Rusty's Lagoon down to the outlet of the Gruink River, and the spot whatever kind of fine feathered friends we have along the way, and sometimes there's some pretty interesting sightings along that along the beach there. So it also gets people out into the park and do a little bit of beach combing. It's a great hike, and so we've been very successful with the Friendship Walk. That is one of the events that a person could sign up for through the Shorebird. It's handled by the Shorebird Festival. So we have, you know, those are that's kind of the start of our summer, and there's opportunities for friends to generate a little bit of income, and so that we can fund a lot of the stuff that we fund, which is some of the proposals that we get. We have, like I mentioned, Janet Klein had a proposal to start a baseline study. Friends would fund that. We also have a tool loaner program that we're in the process of discussing. It's not fixed yet, but it was suggested to us that if there were tools over there in the park and somebody wanted to take a hike on one of the trails that is not maintained that well, that those tools, loppers and weed whackers, might be available to kind of knock down some of the growth around the trails, and that's something, another thing that Friends kind of supports. And
are the Friends funded entirely by private donations, by membership?
By membership, yep, entirely. I think we've gone out for a couple of grants in the past, but it's mostly through these events that generate a little bit of revenue, and then, of course, membership.
Okay, well, last call for questions, listeners. The number to call is 235-7721. Or you can email a question to info@kbbi.org. I see Ranger Jason scribbling over there. Have you passed that information, or do you want to share it?
He sent me a note that Friends, actually, Grace Ridge Brewing is a very community-minded organization.
Oh, and you guys have an event coming up.
Well, not only do we have periodic events down there, but this month's tip jar goes to Friends of the Park. So if you're stopping by Grace Ridge Brewery, toss a buck or two into the tip jar. That's going to go to Friends of the Park, and we appreciate all of the help that we give.
KBBI has benefited from that tip jar as well.
I'm telling you, thank you, Grace Ridge Brewing, and that's a shout out to them.
And the next topic for conversation, I'm going to throw it back to Jason and Jack Blackwell, hunting firearms in the park. And the regulations about it, also about fireworks, because that's going to lead us to bear awareness. It's been recommended to me before that if you see a bear, that you could throw some little firecrackers at them. But I want to know what you have to say, Jason.
No fireworks in the park.
There you go. But what about firearms and hunting?
So within the park. Oh, sorry.
No, you're fine.
So you can't discharge or use firearms in the park except for lawful hunting purposes. And we also ask that you, or it is a regulation, that you are half a mile from a trailhead or a developed campsite. So if you look at any of our park brochures and you see campsites symbols on there, you can't hunt within half a mile of those campsites. And that's a tricky thing to enforce or to do public outreach for, because individuals will just be cruising the shoreline looking for a bear to shoot, and they're oblivious that just over that storm berm that there's a campsite where people can potentially be camping. And we definitely put efforts out there to inform the public the best we can. Last year, we had a bear shot on the Saddle Trailhead. Probably a quarter mile up the Saddle Trailhead, which is our most popular hiking trail with lots of tourists, and that was an illegal hunt. And we had the tourists coming off of the glaciers, walking over this, you know, dead bear, and these hunters cutting it up right there on the trail.
Awkward.
Yeah, awkward.
Well, also that gut pile is going to draw more.
Exactly. But not to say, had they been half a mile from that trailhead, they could have legally shot a bear on the trail and left the gut pile right there. The saddle trail area is becoming more and more habituated with bears. And I just want to say that to the public, be very bear aware. Keep your backpacks with you. Don't leave stuff around. A lot of times we see people leaving backpacks at the junction of the tram, where they go hike out to the tram and then they come back for their stuff and head up to the glacial lake. That's just easy picking for the bears. We have had backpacks snatched by bears, and as they find the stuff and continue to do it, the problem's going to get worse and worse. It is a citation to leave food and goodies accessible to bears. We have not enforced that yet, but we probably are going to start doing it based on our issues.
Well, I want to get back to bear awareness, because I didn't know bears would steal your backpack. But Millie is on the line. Millie, do you read? Hello, Millie?
Hi, this is Willie.
Oh, Willie! Okay, Willie, go for it.
Hi. Well, and forgive me if you've already discussed this. I was on the road and missed the early part of the program, but I wanted to know what kind of public input will be available if Cook Inlet Aquaculture decides to apply for a permit. I know their permit for net pens at the head of Tutka Bay ends this year, and so if they want to continue that program beyond this year, how will the public be notified? How will the public be able to give input? Will the Park Advisory Board be having public hearings on that? Can you discuss that a little bit?
Thanks, Willie. Who's going to take that?
I'd like to weigh in a little bit on this issue. It seems to me that the Park Advisory Board is become the only forum for this issue. It seems unfair to me, actually, because the park is dealing with all kinds of issues, and the net pens is just, you know, a small portion of the park. I'm sorry that the Fish and Game hasn't taken a more, I guess, aggressive outreach as far as these net pens go. So consequently, any public questioning or comments comes through the Ketchumak Bay State Park Citizen Advisory Board. We're having a meeting tonight. It's at 5:30 down at Islands and Oceans. And, you know, we always encourage people to show up and listen and comment and participate. But it has become the single forum for dealing with the net pen issue, and it can be kind of contentious at times, and I guess that's just what we have right now as far as public input. However, I'm not sure that public input carries a lot of weight at the level of the Citizen Advisory Board. Well, and I just want to say that.
What about DNRs? Because it's critical habitat area, right? So is there an opportunity to give any opinion or present? Is anyone monitoring that critical habitat area for effects or impacts?
Sure, Kathleen.
Go ahead.
I can maybe jump in here.
Go ahead.
The Department of Natural Resources received a request from Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association to place net pens at the head of Tutka Bay. Well, actually, there were three sites identified that could work, but that was back in April of 2013, and basically, I won't go into the detail of how everything transpired, but the final decision on that permit application was that the Department of Natural Resources would issue a two-year permit to allow the net peds in Tutka Bay. You know, previously they'd been located in the Tutka Bay Lagoon, and CIAA was proposing to locate them outside in the bay. So we are on year two of that initial permit, and that will wrap up here. I think Cook Inlet will have the net pens out removed. I think in early or mid June sometime. So, you know, going back to Willie's question, what happens next year? You know, it hasn't been decided by DNR about the exact process that we'll go through. You know, the first thing we'll have to do is receive an application from CIAA if they're proposing to place the net pens out there again, and then evaluate that. We recognize it's a very contentious issue. There's a lot of diverse opinions on this, and the other thing too, you know, when the initial application came in, the commissioner had identified that the management plan was in the process of being revised, and you know, this will really give us solid direction on this type of activity, and I can't stress enough about how important it is for people to comment on this. And
is there a mechanism in place for monitoring environmental impacts to the critical habitat area where the net pens are?
I wouldn't say there's an official monitoring program in place. That could be a stipulation that may be placed on future permits. But one of our challenges with the state level is obviously is with our budgets, and the amount that's available for research and monitoring is certainly less than it was in the past. But the Department of Natural Resources, our mission is to manage the park lands and waters. We rely heavily on the other state agencies, such as Department of Fish and Game and Department of Environmental Conservation, for their input. They have the expertise in pollution issues, and again, ADF&G is, you know, they're tasked with managing the fish and wildlife on our state lands and waters. So.
And Mako, you say this evening at 5:30 there is a meeting at Islands and Ocean where a person might give input.
That's correct.
And what about written input?
Well, written input can be sent to the park at any time. And actually, I'm going to have to defer to Jason as far as their address goes. But I'm sure that written input would be welcome.
What do you say, Jason?
Yeah, so as far as any complaints I receive or suggestions or comments I receive that have to do with the park, they are documented, put with a case number with them, and sent up the chain to my supervisor, Jack Blackwell. and there's also a forum, and there's also the ability to speak with Jack Blackwell directly, and there's also availability to speak with staff up in Anchorage. We're open. That's what we are. We're a public service. We are open to the public comments. Anybody who wants to give us comments at any time, we're happy to receive them and discuss anything we can.
Okay, and Willie, if you're still there, did that address your question to your satisfaction?
Well, yeah, superficially.
Okay.
It's
well,
a very,
take a minute. We've got 4 minutes left. You can have one of
subject.
Them. Thanks.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot more discussion that needs to happen. So I look forward to having some public forums when, if and when Cook Inlet Aquaculture does apply for another permit.
Okay, thanks, Willie.
Thanks.
Now, the time is 9:56, so it's time to say thank you and wrap up a bit. But I want to get a final from any of you guys to talk about Leave No Trace, Bear Awareness, and then we'll move on to what's about to happen over this weekend, just to remind folks.
Well, as far as Bear Awareness, things change in the park. For years, I said there are no brown bears over there.
Oh, you don't say that anymore,
do
you?
I don't say that anymore. And, I think we're starting to see, get more sightings of them down in the Humpy Creek area. And, of course, and once they get there, then they're going to probably move west from there. But
well, I used to work for the yurt people, and that was what we would tell people who rented the yurt near Humpy Creek was, well, you know, you're going to see bears.
That's right. And, you know, not to say that black bears aren't dangerous. They can be as dangerous, I suppose, as a brown bear. They just have a different attitude. And so you're going to get black bears live in the park. You just have to, just like Jason said, don't leave, don't tempt them.
And Jack Blackwell, do you have anything else that you feel like went unsaid or that you want to share? I want to thank you for being available for the whole hour. And you are a superintendent of parks. Thank you so much for being on the coffee table. Any final comments?
Yes, I would just like to invite the public to come out and experience their state park this summer. If it's been a while since you've been out in the park or across the bay, put it on the calendar. Get out and visit your state park this summer. If you haven't been to the park, many people, it's always sad to hear that many people haven't been across the bay. Try to figure out a way to get across there and visit Kachemak Bay State Park. There's great opportunities to volunteer. Go out with a ranger or one of our trail crews, work on trail, fix up a cabin, do some maintenance in the park, and I really would like to encourage folks to get out and see their park, experience their park this summer.
Well, thank you, Jack Blackwell, Park Superintendent. Also, thanks to Jason Oakley, ranger for Kachemak Bay State Park, and shout out to Eric Clark, who is over across the bay working.
And to Brad Goraski.
And Brad Goraski.
And Christina Whiting.
And Christina Whiting, thank you. And to Mako Haggerty from Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park. Wait, is there someone else?
Robert Archibald does a lot of work for us, too. So a shout out to Robert Archibald.
This has been The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. For the Homer area today, rain, mainly between 11 a.m. and 11 p.m., a high near 51 degrees, and a low tonight around 42 degrees. Northeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming southeast 5 to 10 miles per hour this evening, west after midnight. Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is coming up next. You are tuned to KBBI, AM 890, Homer. The time is 10 a.m. Good morning.